Okay. Welcome. Hey, would you say the prayer real quick?
We'll be glad to.
Dear kind Heavenly Father, we're thankful for this beautiful day to be out here at Deer Springs Ranch. We're thankful for the opportunity to gather as board and as members, discuss the needs and things going on here at the ranch. We ask thy blessing on us as we're out here that we'll all be safe, and we bless the, those that are working on the fire up north that they'll be able to extinguish that quickly and that we'll be able to continue to enjoy our time out here. We thank thee, Father, for all of our many blessings, and these things we ask in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, roll call. I'm Brent Fulmer, lot 117.
Gary Clarkson, 76.
Kate Hoff, 83.
Gary Clarkson, 173.
Ben Clarkson, 71-72.
Stephen Laurie Gothard, 206.
Randy and Karen Fry, lot 13.
Glenn Gray, lot 211.
Bruce, lot 101.
What was that, Bruce McQueen?
Vance Green, 156.
And Rachel Kennedy, lot 9.
Anybody else online?
Jerry Glover, Dale Clarkson, Robert Allen.
All righty. All right, Barry, you're up for the, and I change this every time, but it just keeps saying May meeting minutes, or it's never the right month, but.
That's all right. That's all right. We all make mistakes.
Okay.
I made one once.
Oh, okay.
But I was mistaken.
I think I changed it on the ones that are sent out, so no one else knows your mistake.
There you go. There you go. The meeting minutes were sent out to the board right after the meeting and again a couple of days ago for the May meeting minutes. I didn't have any feedback or changes. Do you guys have any suggestions or
did they look all right?
Looks good to me.
Make a motion that we approve them.
I'll second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Perfect.
Okay, we're gonna put the waiver stuff down at the end so we can get through this other stuff, which is not going to take very long. And treasurer report, Danielle. Mike's not here.
Doing great. I reported earlier that there were 18 lots that are past due, 7 of which are 2 years past due, so they will be going to collections. In our bank account, if I can find it. In our checking account, there is $138,821.30. In our combined two savings accounts, there is $21,907.76. And in our 10, 11, 10 plus CDs, there is $113,370.13. And the meeting is at the time 82 or 86 as it was last month. So. Questions on the P&L that was sent out? Yes. Most of that is going to be the water right transfers that we did. We had not anticipated that, so we just put it in and out. We just paid Barry what it costs to record them, so, and then the members were paying us. Any other questions?
Any other questions? Okay. Mike's not here, so I'll tell you about what's gone on. The deck on the garden cabin has been replaced, and we had several of us involved, mostly Jeff and Tina. Tina did all the design work. Several of us helped, and I want you to particularly notice the linseed oil job. That was me. I'm quite proud of it. So, and then we had to replace the water heater in cabin 7. The water heater was leaking, and it shorted out the electronics on it. It wouldn't work either on plugged into the wall, or it wouldn't work on batteries. So we just replaced it with one of the ones that we bought. The four that we bought, we had plans for them, but that took priority. So, any questions? Alright. Cody, you're up. Property manager report. But before he starts, I will say this. We worked on the propane fridge in cabin 6. I was thinking of everything that could be wrong with it. I would spend time on it. Cody spent time on it. We couldn't get it work. Couldn't get it to work. So I was coming down, and we were going to replace the magnetic safety valve in the gas valve itself. And the night before, Cody just whacked it with a crescent wrench, and it started working. So anyway, I was looking for all the technical stuff, and he got it fixed. So anyway, you're up, Cody.
Well, I was going to mention you did such a good job on the linseed oil that we're going to go ahead and nominate you to do that annually so that we can keep it in such good shape. Anyhow, the fridge was one thing that was going to bring up. The cabins have all been cycled through, and everything seems to be going good as far as the rodent stuff. I've been keeping traps in there when they're not occupied, so gone from catching a whole bunch to just very minimal, and same on the droppings. There's been a couple of things brought up by guests staying in cabins. One was screens, which I've got materials to replace screens, and we'll go through all of them and make sure they've all got screens. So I took the dump trailer in yesterday and was going to bring up the Ford is slipping, like the transmission slips pretty bad, and that's, so I don't know if we, I don't know what we want to do with that, and we can maybe talk about that later.
Relatively new transmission, I have to look and see where the, we got a pretty good warranty on it too, so.
The transmission was redone on it? Yeah, it's slipping. It's wanting to. I mean, when you just give it a little bit of gas, it's wanting to shift down.
Of course, the murderer is locking up.
No.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe we take it in and have them look at that. We can talk about that later as well. And then just around headquarters here, trying to do watering and then the weeding and edging. There's obviously a lot to do around the playground area and stuff, and I'll just on that stuff. As far as cabins, there's cabin 7 and cabin 3 checks in today. There's nothing else until starting Thursday. 1, 2, and 3 I'll check in, and 10 as well down here.
Hey, did you look at that window in cabin 10 about it? It's just cracked,
it's
right?
It's just cracked, and I don't know if I don't know if we just want to put tape on it or if we want to try to look at replacing it or what we want to do, but it is just cracked at this point.
Well, we talked about, it's one of those aluminum windows, right?
Yeah.
Aluminum windows.
Yeah.
What we were talking about is we think the best course of action is to spend money in replacing that pane of glass. So we just eventually replace the window and, you know, with a better window. And go from there. So, yeah, put some tape on it.
Maybe put some clear tape or something.
It's not going to affect anything. It's not broken out. There's not a hole in it.
Can you give me the size of the window? Just email that to me.
Get measurements of it, yeah.
On construction sites, we regularly can find some surplus or other things that we've got. That we may
okay, Cade reported that the power went out again. It usually goes out about 4 in the morning.
What are you doing at 4 in the morning?
Going to the bathroom.
So
and the light doesn't go on.
Comes back on at about 7:30. We got to replace the batteries. That's a big. We can do some stopgap measures by selectively shutting off cabins that aren't occupied. And but eventually we're gonna have to. We got to replace the batteries. And I don't know. Going to cost us anywhere between $5,000 and $7,000, best estimate.
And between now and then, I'll just keep in touch with you as far as we had talked about shutting down the cabins that aren't being used to try to save on power. So I'll communicate with you to get that done.
So that's
how it goes.
So, Cody, I know we've been having, you just barely dumped the trailer and you just had to dump it again, right? So any ideas on how we're still getting people putting non-cabin trash in there, right?
Moving over here, I mean, I don't know if that'll make a huge difference, but I was going to try just parking it over here for a while, and then the camera that was on here, actually, maybe I'll look at putting something on, you know, put a camera on it. But I mean, for now, that's why I left it right there. I figure I'll try that for a while, just park over there by the gas tank there.
Which I didn't see was over there.
Oh. I mean, we'll try that out and see how it goes.
The only thing with it being there, we were down here working on something, and I noticed the cattle guys were trying to get a big trailer in, and your truck was parked there at that time, and they could not make that turn.
Okay. Well, so I've also opened this up. You know, we had it to where there was just one gate. I took that one post out, and now it's, you know, there's a double gate there. So talking to Kevin, he couldn't get his trailer through there without, I mean, it was just so close. So that's not permanent what's over there, but it's at least so that he can have a bigger opening there. So I think he'll be able to get through there.
I didn't know
a little easier. But yeah, it was a really tight fit there. So again, not permanent, but do for now.
Is the trash trailer issue that members out here are using it, not cabin user?
No, it's
what's
even just like household junk. It's like yard cleanup junk. So, I mean, people are dumping all kinds of junk in there. And it'll just, I mean, it'll, like I said, I took it 2 weeks ago, and we've had all the cabins, I guess, cycle through, you know, one time. But
which should only be one or two bags of trash. There's more than that.
I mean, it was full when I took it. Yeah. It was needing to be done, but I mean, like I said, I know it's kind of an ongoing thing, and maybe try and we'll try that out. See how it goes.
Maybe put a sign down there that it's up here.
I don't want them to know where it is. I'll try this for now, and I mean, if there's problems with people not knowing where to find it, then my kind of thought here is people are supposed to bring laundry and keys right here anyhow. So if they just bring their laundry, keys, and trash, it's all right there. And then, and those are the people that are supposed to be using it anyhow. So
as long as you don't, we tried using sticking it over here before, and the managers at the time, Paul and Nancy, the odor was pretty bad. They complained about it, and it was pretty bad. But.
Well, if I get to complaining, I'll move it. We'll just try this out, I guess, and see how, you know, we'll see how it goes. And if it doesn't work, we'll just put it back over there. And
well, maybe we can put another reminder out in the emails and stuff or something to it, but it seems to be a constant problem. Okay, I just wanted to. Okay.
That's all I got.
That's it. Okay, Dirk is not here, so we've got three of the four new sampling stations installed, and we're going to be doing the fourth one as soon as I get the Danielle ordered it, a saddle to go on the pipe. It's going to go up next to the Scoot and Pavel. Larry, I'm pretty comfortable doing the digging there because I know where everything is. And so
let me know if you
won't need your help.
Oh, or he's going to hand me a shovel.
Well, Tina, if you want a big hole like we did before that's easy to work in, just call me.
Yeah. I'm going to make it.
If you're still sore from hanging upside down and doing
I'm going to make it clanking. As small as possible. In fact, where's that 1 foot bucket?
Yeah.
So anyway, when Tina took the water test, she's been taking the routine water test from the cabins and doing and investigative samples from the sampling stations. Mm-hmm. And we've been passing, and so kudos to Tina. She is, as long as she doesn't get cocky, I think it'll keep working. And anyway, sampling stations are a big deal. They were expensive, but they'll if they eliminate the having to redo the water tests, it's well worth the money. Okay, report of each area of responsibility. Hey, do you got anything to report on the road projects?
So Larry keeps doing little projects here and there. If you walk around the ranch, you'll probably find one of his projects, but. He's done a bit of work up on Crawford, both down on the lower side of things and then further up around one of the bends. So, just kind of making progress there. Other than that, I don't think we haven't done anything too major recently. So, just keep on working on what we can work on.
Larry, you want to talk about your
I want to say thanks to everybody that really pitched in and helped put the playground confusion together. And I think it turned out pretty okay. We've had a few kids. It's been kid approved and tested. I brought out the rubber floor covering today, and so there's volunteer opportunity for anybody that wants to spread rubber. What did the playground cost?
It was about $2,500.
$2,500. So the approved fall zone covering for the ground, the amount that they told me we needed was going to be about $2,200. I only got half because I don't think we need to go as big as what I initially thought. So right now there's $1,000 worth of rubber sitting on the ranch trailer over there that will spread around under the playground. I need to go up and get a big weed barrier soil fabric thing to lay down before we spread it.
Are we thinking anything for containment or pipes?
Well, that's in Alaska, we have a floating barrier. Anytime there's like an oil spill or a fuel spill in the water, we have these, it's about the color of your hat, these orange floating barriers that you throw out and it creates a loop. I wish I had one of those here. We'd have this little 6-inch orange foam filled fabric.
What about the ones they use on like road work? Oh,
like straw rolls. That or somewhere I saw, where have I been lately? I saw some rubber, like speed bump material that were stacked up 8 feet long. I thought, God, if I can swipe those, that'd be a good barrier. The problem with, if you put railroad ties around, then that's kind of slivery and trip zone. And the PVC pipe conduit that I donated and Joe Bose donated that we put around the volleyball thing is too lightweight. It still can get kicked around. And eventually it's going to be brittle in the sun and somebody's going to crack it and break it. So I don't think a PVC ring around the playground is the right thing, but I haven't come up with a good solution as of yet. What's that?
They're going to rot.
I think they're going to deteriorate in the sun. Yeah.
You want to just try and pour a cement curb around it?
What about just like a garden fence?
I think for now, as long as people don't drag their feet through the rubber and rake it out, we can keep it contained. But some type of mow strip, some type of perimeter barrier.
Another project.
Yeah.
Speaking of the playground, Ben Collingwood, when we were assembling, said, "Hey, I'd like to paint this thing." And he contacted me. He's going to get some paint, and he's hoping to come out next weekend and paint it. So if anybody wants to
help paint,
we'll be busy. We'll be volunteering to do that.
I think it's going to be a fun thing for kids to enjoy and play on. I was going to ask, has anybody fished at the fish pond?
My kids have.
Did they catch fish?
Yeah.
I had a couple people say, I can't catch any fish, and I see a lot of dead ones. So I don't know who. There was somebody else reported.
Recently, he comes to Vegas, they caught 40.
40?
40.
Wow.
They put all but one back. So there's fish in there.
I'd say James and I have been up there a few times, and he had his friend here this last weekend, and they kept a couple of them, but same thing. Well, we just catch and release them, but if they're not catching them, they don't know.
I can't even remember now who somebody said that they were seeing lots of little tiny ones. He said, "Did you just stalk little teeny things?" I said, "No, they were good sized fish." Just wanted to ask how anybody's experience had been up there. I had intended to drive the fire truck out today, but I just had too many other things going on, and so maybe during the week or we'll bring it out for the July board meeting parade.
Hey, speaking of that, maybe we ought to keep it for the
town and decorate it out.
Yeah, Western Legends Parade.
Deer Springs Fire.
Publicity.
I wanted to just kind of again bring up and mention, I've had two or three people asking me, can we do a fire pit here or there? And my advice to everybody every time is no. No fires anywhere at any time. I know that's, each to their own, but sooner or later we're going to have a fire devastation, and I, for one, don't want to be responsible in any way, shape, or form for what's going to happen when a fire does get out of control, which obviously most of you are aware of the pretty good-sized fire burning north of us. When I took pictures of it 2 days ago, it looked much, much further east than it really is. So the smoke must have been going up a canyon and then pluming up, because I was in Crawford, and then I drove around into Meadow Canyon. I took pictures of it from Meadow Canyon, and it completely appeared to be over. I mean, it was looking like it was above gravel and birch, but it's really quite a ways east. I don't know how it was doing that. I mean, west, yeah. But hopefully they'll get it knocked down before it shifts and comes back the other way. And
I mean, it can come back this way because it's north of the burn in 2022.
Yeah.
So there isn't any fuel to come back this direction.
Well, that's a good thing.
Unless it comes
up and around.
Up and around and then back.
Yeah. Has anybody driven from the north down? Did you come down to Tropic Reservoir this time?
Nope.
Okay.
None of the three of the side roads headed west are all closed. Skunk, Hollow, and a couple others. But the main road's open, and there's very little presence as far as firefighters. I think they're all staging on the...
Out on 89?
89 and Hatch and coming up that way.
Yeah.
There was two trucks total. And 2022, there was 100.
I read this one is not really accessible by vehicle, so they're doing all air.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything else, Brent.
Did you want to talk about maybe donations for that?
Oh, the like I said, the right now I'm into the rubber for the playground, about $1,000. Brent has contributed some. If anybody wants to contribute to the playground ground cover, let me know if you have a few pennies to spare.
Let me know means send a check or Venmo.
Bullion.
Bullion.
Bitcoin. Whatever. Whatever. Whatever.
I'm thinking that we ought to use those concrete barriers and some razor wire and we need to keep the kids out.
That's
then we don't have to worry about
not a bad plan.
But that'd cost money too.
Yeah.
All right, are you done?
Yep, done.
Okay, well, Mike's not around. Dirk's not here. So, Ben, are you want to talk about the signage? Ben's on Zoom.
Yeah, I've got the signs. There's been a little delay as far as the uprights and stuff that I was planning on putting on it. I just want to confirm before they go up and somebody screams that the six signs that I got would go at the turnoff from Meadow Canyon at the bottom of the airstrip, at the Forest Service gate coming in from Dixie National Forest into the top of Meadow Canyon, heading up Slide Canyon where the BLM enters the private ground at lot 292, and then the top end and the bottom end of Podunk or Johnny Brown, lots 1 and lot 13, and then where it crosses into Broad Hollow coming from Slide Canyon near Brent's place or about lot 122. So that is where they will go up this week. Hopefully rigid enough they don't fall over easily, so I don't want to move them.
And yeah, basically, the outer perimeter entrance when entering the private area.
Right. So many of them would be set back off of the county road until they're actually entering onto private property. If there's no questions or anything, that's the only thing on that topic.
Is that it?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Barry, you're up.
All right. Glad everybody's here. I'm going to give you just a little bit of background, and mainly we wanted to get member input. A lot we've received, which I think was shared with the membership through an email. I did sanitize those so the names weren't included because I didn't get permission to share those, but I wanted to provide a summary of, well, I wanted to provide the feedback we've gotten so far. As we mentioned last meeting, we will open this meeting for member comments, either pro or against the as far as the waiver discussion. But let me outline a little bit of what we're looking at, provide some ground rules. And then because because we're missing two board members today, then I anticipate we'll probably take the information and actually hold the vote itself at the next meeting, because we want all the board members to participate and have their voices heard, and their absences were not anticipated. So I know that most people that have been involved in this have heard me say this a million times, but we as board members have an obligation to protect the assets of the company. We do not have a fiduciary obligation to the individual members. I know that's hard to understand and maybe rubs people the wrong way, but that is the way the law stands. The idea has been in the works for over a year, discussion of waiver, various waivers, waivers on specific uses, et cetera, et cetera. The board, before I got on back on the board last year adopted a waiver form, but did not at that point in time vote on or decide on the implementation or enforcement of that waiver. The discussion and the information that we've been gathering is related to the enforcement or non-enforcement of that rule as it stands. We could spend the next 3 days discussing the contents of the waiver itself. That's not what today's meeting is for. Today's meeting is for to deal with the possible enforcement. I fully expect that if there are changes that need to be or should be made or suggested changes to a waiver once it's ultimately adopted or once we get to that point, we're going to turn that back to the committee and provide opportunity for member involvement, because that is a complicated matter that we dragged on for at least 6 months before we got to where we are. The waiver is, in fact, at this moment, part of the rules. The question is do we or do we not enforce it, or do we not remove it from the rules? So with the obligation of the board members understood, being hopefully understood as our obligation to protect the assets of the company, I want to make sure that everybody's aware. Many suggestions have come in and good information. Some people recently pointed out the recreational use statute for the state of Utah, which gives us some protection for people that come on the ranch free of charge to engage in recreational activities. However, that statute does not provide any protection for things that happen with members, because members pay to be here. That's what your assessments are. So I just want to assure people that that has been considered, taken into account, and as well as a lot of other input. At the end of the day, then, I think we have – it's a challenge for the board members. I think everybody's open to listen and hear. We've been accused, unfortunately, of not listening, but not necessarily agreeing, and not listening are two different things. I am one board member. I am one owner. I was initially asked the question of what I would suggest. I provided the answer. I assure the members out there that I have no intention of taking somebody's lot or beating them up, but I do, as a board member, have an obligation to enforce the rules. And that includes also bylaws, CC&Rs, etc. If we were in a better situation as far as all a smaller group, then we may have an opportunity to amend bylaws and otherwise, but it's the last time we amended them, I was involved in drafting them, and it was virtually impossible then, and I think a very difficult prospect now. With that being said, I appreciate the input that was provided, and I tried to take that into account. Most members took some time to put together a logical explanation of feelings and how they feel this should go, and I appreciate that. To the extent that I can, I want to take into account the members' feelings and where they're at. But a decision does need to be made in moving forward. So with that being said, I think it's important that any member that wants to have input in the meeting and take time, I think we should limit it to comments for and against to about 2 minutes, just so we're not here all day. And if you have provided your input in writing, you're still welcome to speak if you'd like to, but we have that and have taken it into consideration We've discussed a few options, but lacking two board members today, my recommendation is once we take the input, then we consider it and have a vote in the next meeting when all the board members can participate. Any questions so far? Yes.
With the Utah changes and HOA laws, have you gone over to make sure that we're both charged and Utah? Sorry, HOA laws.
There were no changes. We're in compliance, but there are going to be additional changes, as Michael Jordison pointed out. We're going towards different requirements that we have to have. One of those requirements, which isn't new, but it's helpful, in order to enforce the rules, then if we have or we want to assess a penalty or a fine, it has to be in the rules. And so, ergo, that's why we're here today, is to discuss whether or not we implement some type of a fine or a penalty for violating this rule or all the rules, and we'll discuss that as we go along. But yes, we've reviewed, and we're in compliance. Our bylaws meet and match and actually incorporate most of the statute as it stands. There have been some changes on disclosure and on information related to fees and costs that can be charged, related to transfer fees. If you sell your lot, how much the board or how much the association can assess, whether you can or can't have reinvestment fees and those kind of things. Right now, we're in good shape. But those things may change every year, then those things are brought up again. And so I actually had the opportunity. Neil Walter was a sponsor of the HOA bill, and once he had it drafted, he came to me, and I actually helped him make some changes to it before it was provided. And fortunately, it passed. It didn't pass with all the requirements we wanted at the time, but that's how politics works. That's how this works. We try to compromise to the point where we can get a better situation, but we can't always get everything that each of us individually want. So, did I answer your question?
Barry.
Sorry.
Barry.
Yeah.
This is Vance, Barry. Listen, we're going to have a fair amount of you audience participation. They need to walk up to the speaker.
Yep, we'll do that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, well, we'll open the time. Anybody that wants to have a couple minutes to put forth their feelings on whether we're dealing with the penalty or the fine related to the waiver that is included in the rules. Obviously, you're not limited in your 2 minutes to discuss that if you want to. I know there are people that feel like the content of the waiver should be changed. And that can happen. That's a matter of we're not prepared to do that today, but that can happen. Use the 2 minutes however you feel necessary or helpful.
Well, Barry, just to clarify, it's the rule that has the annual requirement to sign the waiver by owners.
Yes.
And a penalty associated with that rule.
Correct. All right. Anybody online that wants to start the ball rolling? Anybody here that wants to make a contribution?
Yeah.
Come on up. Identify yourself and your lot number and speak away.
Ryan Castle, lot 130. So if you have a fiduciary obligation to uphold the CNRs as well as looking out for the interests of the organization, it would seem to me that in the CNRs, well, when you look at the precedent, it's state and federal law, then CNR, bylaws, rules. If we look into CNRs, in 12.2, it calls for an insurance policy that must be maintained by the association that covers a minimum of $1 million per incident of liability on the ranch. And it specifically calls for the policy to contain a severability of interest clause to ensure that an owner in a participation role wouldn't have the claim denied in the case of negligence on behalf of the ranch. So to me, that seems like it guarantees that every owner is going to be covered by that $1 million per incident insurance policy, which is just the opposite of waiving that right with a rule. So it would seem that the CNR is explicit in its language, saying that the owner is guaranteed to be able to make a claim under that clause. And the rule seems to be in conflict with that, or even trying to circumvent the CNR, which should have precedence over the rule.
Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. I'm not going to respond to each one. The CCNRs clearly provide a requirement for the insurance. I don't see it as being a conflict that we have a higher level of care, but you've given an explanation in writing, and that's certainly been helpful in evaluating how this goes. And honestly, I don't know how anybody else is going to vote when it comes to that, but we appreciate the information. And what you're saying is true.
But it seems like it'd be in conflict that you couldn't be covered and also be required to waive coverage.
You can be covered by an insurance policy and waive the personal right to sue the ranch. I don't see any conflict there. But, again, we may agree to disagree.
Wow.
Any other? Go ahead. Any other comments?
Yes.
Bob Edmond, lot 160.
Okay.
I believe that it is actually possible for you to waive your rights, that if there's gross negligence, you can still sue. And I really think that we would solve a lot less problems if you just increased your insurance.
And we're considering that. We're evaluating the insurance in addition to this. So that's been in the discussion.
You know, waiving your rights, you can't waive your right to sue.
Correct. You can't waive your right to sue, and you can't waive your right to gross negligence, for sure.
So I really think to solve it is you increase the insurance.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Barry, this is Kathy Pierce.
Yeah.
At the beginning, I thought I heard you say that there was not a vote, or that you hadn't made a decision on if there was going to be any penalties for those that did not sign. And my understanding is it was voted on last year, so why has it been brought back up again if it's already been voted on that we were not going to have penalties?
I don't think that there was correct. I wasn't in the meeting, and I wasn't on the board. I don't think the decision was that there wouldn't be penalties, but only that would be postponed for later discussion. But I can't answer that because I wasn't there. Maybe some of you board members that were there can address that.
Yeah, so there was a proposed penalty. That particular penalty that was proposed was not approved, but there was discussion around seeing how the signatures of the waiver went and addressing it in the future. So we're now at that future state. We've run for 1 year. We tried to collect them from everybody, and some people didn't respond, and so that's kind of what's instigated. What do we do now? Do we impose a penalty? Do we remove the rule? Where do we need to go from there? So that's what's brought up the additional discussion, Kathy.
Okay.
Yes, you are correct. There was a penalty proposed last year. That one was not approved. and there's been different versions of the penalty approved this or proposed at this time. So it's slightly different from that one. And again, all of this stuff is subject to change every year, any board meeting, any.
Seems crazy that we could do this every year. I mean, it seems ridiculous, and I think it needs to go into the bylaws. And so it's, you know, if it's something that is going to be changed every year, it seems like it's a waste of the board, it's a waste of the members and everybody's time. And so that's kind of the way I'm feeling. I'm against it, but I do believe that there would be a problem with it being approved, which means the owners, members, are taking a stand the way they feel. And I know, Barry, you made the comment that you are to protect the organization. And, you know, in my view, is we are the organization. So you are protecting us from ourselves, which is seems crazy. But that's why I feel like if we can go back and do this every year, it needs to go by the bylaws. And I think maybe having another selected group or however you want to do it to look at these bylaws, and because I think that there's some other things that need to be brought in that could be beneficial to the members, and it needs to be brought up, I think, in another, maybe another setting, but looking at new bylaws.
And that's certainly prerogative of the membership at any point in time to propose an amendment or a review of the bylaws. There have been several that have discussed or proposed that the waiver be submitted to a separate legal counsel, and nobody's resisting that. It's just a matter of the membership has the right at any point in time to get a legal opinion or to change this or to fire the board or to, I mean, there's a lot of different ways, including the rule that I sent out in my initial research that once the rule is adopted, if membership doesn't like it, all you have to do is have a 51% vote and that rule goes away, regardless of what the board says. So you have options. I'm not here to cram something down your throat. I'm just going through the process. And your comment that the duty that we owe to the company is to the individual members, unfortunately, on a legal basis, that's just not correct. Just out of curiosity, online and everybody that's here, if you're comfortable, how many people are opposed to having a waiver on the a waiver of liability on the ranch?
Blanket waiver?
Yeah.
A blanket waiver. I'm against it. I think it needs to be more individual.
I agree.
Why penalize people that don't use the cabins? And I know that it's been stated, you know, this whole thing started out with cabin waivers. And then it just grew into, you know, a few people make their a voice, and then you get a blanket waiver. And I don't use the ponds, I don't use the cabins, and I think a blanket waiver is not the right way to go. And I believe that there's a lot of people that feel that way, that don't use those amenities that we pay for, and now we're paying for them, and now you want to penalize us on top of that. And I don't think that it's the right thing to do.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Anybody else online that wants to voice that they're opposed to a blanket waiver, just so we can get a good count?
Yeah. This is Jerry Glover, lot 12. I was on the committee of all this, and you know I'm against it. So.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Lot 274, Israel Whitbeck, against.
Lot 128 is opposed. 128 is opposed.
Tell me your name.
Robert Allen, number 16. I'm opposed.
Robert Fjord, lot 299 opposed.
Lot 101 opposed.
Anybody else? I don't want to put you on the spot, but I mean,
Might be easier to ask who's in favor.
Let's ask that. Who is in favor of having a blanket waiver to protect the assets of the company?
I don't care one way or another.
Not 211, I'm for.
We've had a waiver since I bought in 2017 in one form or another. And I believe in 2017, my purchase packet included a waiver to begin with that had nothing to do with the cabins or water or anything else. So it's nothing new. Every HOA that I'm involved with has some sort of liability waiver.
Thank you.
And that's common throughout all HOAs.
Thank you. Somebody online said they were in favor. I didn't catch your name. Sorry.
Yeah, Clint Gray, Lot 211.
This is Danielle. I did a quick rough count this morning just because a couple more waivers have come in since the last month's meeting. Currently, out of the 237 unique owners, 95 have not signed a waiver. I do not know whether that is opposed or didn't read it or for whatever reason. And 142 have signed.
Hey.
Excuse me, but I did talk to a few people that signed it, and there used to be, like the gentleman said earlier, every association they know has waivers. There's the difference of saying, yes, we need to have a waiver, which I do agree that we need to. Anybody renting a cabin, the cabins are they're off-the-grid cabins, and they need to sign a waiver. So signing a waiver is one thing, and a lot of people that I talked to signed the waiver not really paying attention, hurrying through the day. They signed it not realizing it was this new waiver, that it was a blanket waiver, and they are against it. So to go off of those numbers, I think people I'd love to see to do a real head count of people that really knew what they were signing.
So here's a secondary question, just to throw it out there. How many people are in favor of a waiver for the cabins? Okay, so everybody raise their hands.
Is anybody opposed to a waiver for cabin use?
Lot 274, no issue with the waiver for the cabin. That makes sense.
I agree.
Any other comments before we wrap this up?
I agree. Just for the cabins.
Just for the cabins, 128.
Come up.
While Tammy's walking up, this is Larry Clarkson. I'll make a comment. In the past history of the ranch, over the course of, let's just say, the last 40 years, probably 8 or 9 out of 10 actionable accidents, potential liability, potential lawsuit level liabilities, none have been related to the cabins. Just for your information. We've had serious injury, fatality, significant things, none related to cabins. So that's partially what started this whole process of trying to cover the association and the potential liability that could result in significant property value loss.
Okay. Larry?
Go ahead, Tammy. Yes. Larry?
Hold on. Tammy's first. She was in line here. Go ahead.
Okay. For those of us that don't have to use the cabins, would there be consideration to maybe let us lease back or donate back the cabin time? Because there's not enough cabin time if everybody were to take their 2 weeks. And if we did sign over every year that we don't want to use the cabins or whatever, ranch to be able to cross off, okay, there's 2 weeks available for us to make money on these cabins because the Levitts aren't going to use them. Would that reduce anything for people that aren't using the cabins with this waiver? I mean, everything seems to go to the cabins?
The short answer is no, unfortunately, because if we were to, which just so I'll state this as a general, renting out the cabins raises our liability. If we have not, if we have members, it's better to have members using than sell, lease, or try to make money on the use of the cabins, Airbnb, and otherwise. It actually makes our liability much worse.
With Bear Grylls and I don't know who else, you know, they have rented.
Yes, it happens, and it's not, and it's legally allowed and possible. I'm just again stating my personal view that.
Well, let me add a couple other things to that. So the last rule changes, the board did approve in the rules that the renting of cabins to non-members was suspended for a period of until we could get all of the liability issues resolved. So currently the board is not renting to non-members in that scenario unless they come specifically to the board and request permission. And in that scenario, everything that we've done so far, we've requested that they have a member sponsor kind of assuming that liability for that member. So we haven't really been doing that. And then kind of going back to your being able to donate it back to the ranch or sell it back to the ranch or whatever that way, the cabins are currently being I have not seen any issues with people being able to reserve cabins because people have used too much time. We have plenty of open spots to them. So I don't know how you would put precedence on unused time from that perspective, but the weekends are being booked that way, so I don't know that that would function from that perspective.
So if we were to say, okay, for 2025, we are not using the cabin, would that reduce the waiver on us that live out here?
So, again,
it's like, okay, you want everybody to sign, but part of this doesn't apply to all of this. And so...
Well, it does. So back to and again, I'm not necessarily in favor of the waiver, but back to what Larry brought up, there are dangers and activities on the ranch that cause liability to the ranch. The roads cause the liability, running ATVs on the ranch. I mean, those are still ranch property. So, there is liability for all of that kind of stuff there. So... but that, I don't know that that's a viable solution for what we're trying to do, and changing that is kind of going away from the overarching goal of whether we should enforce it or whether we should even have a rule. I mean, that the board could still decide we don't need to have the rule or something along those lines.
Just so everybody knows, there is a separate rule that requires a waiver for cabin use. What we're discussing was a rule that was added that all members sign a waiver. Now, there have been blanket waivers in the past. There have been cabin waivers in the past. But what we're dealing with right now is the blanket waiver, if you want to call it that. And we're trying to address the liabilities that exist in the cabins for sure, but also outside the cabins, road use. The one that makes me the most nervous is water use, just because our system works pretty well, but it's not fantastic. Sorry, Daniel.
Curry on lot 242. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, this is Denise. And as far as the ranch waiver, I can't imagine why we wouldn't have a ranch waiver. It's dangerous out here. There are different things going on. It's a protection. So I'm all for having a blanket ranch waiver, but I also think that the cabin rentals need a separate waiver upon check-in.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Kathy Pierce said, Larry, what were the other accidents or liability incidents that did not include the cabin usage? I am just curious.
I could give you a whole list, but part of them you probably don't want to know about. But obviously the worst one was the Doug Hunt's son that was killed right out here past the gate. There's been multiple ATV accidents that ended up in near life flight type situations. Motorcycle going through the barbed wire fence right out by the cattle guard. Our previous ranch employee manager that was electrocuted in the generator station right up here. Lost the use of the limbs. Many of you don't even know some of the liability and issues that have happened, all of which are not related to the cabins. So to have a cabin waiver is only logical, but that doesn't cover any of the other potential liability that we as this association stand exposed to. And the waiver does not cover any gross negligence. Everybody is still entitled to potential redress of gross negligence if an accident does occur that somebody's liable for.
How many of those incidents was the ranch found to be negligent?
None of them were pursued.
The only one that's ever been pursued was the horseback lady falling off the horse that injured herself. And that was pursued, and the insurance company settled it.
That's the infamous killer donkey.
Killer donkey attack.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Israel Lipik, what, 247? Go ahead.
Yeah, 274. I just have a question. The ranch's current insurance coverage, is it $1 million? Is that the policy?
Yeah, that's the current policy, is $1 million coverage.
Okay. My question is, how was it decided that that was inadequate? Was there a study done as far as the ranch's exposure, or how was did that decision?
It has not been decided that that's inadequate. We're reviewing right now to determine whether that is adequate. The CCNRs require that as a minimum, but we have discussed the possibility of raising that limit because a lot of people's feedback said, I'd rather pay for more insurance. I just don't think, again, this is just me, I don't think that raising the insurance is the only answer. That has to be part of the mix, but I feel strongly that we need a waiver anyway.
Well, first I can tell you, it has been said in meetings that $1 million is inadequate, and that's part of the reason for the waiver. I'm not saying you said it, but someone has certainly said that. $1 million, without doing a study about the ranch's exposure and just saying that that's not adequate, it's just based on kind of pulling it out of the air. $1 million coverage is pretty typical in commercial policies. Decisions have been made by, multi-million dollar trucking companies that $1 million coverage for their trucks is sufficient to cover their exposure. So, and my own point is that $1 million is adequate. And not only that, but from a practical purpose in the personal injury world and contingency fees and all that type of thing, if, God forbid, somebody were to get hurt on the ranch and bring a claim against the ranch, 99.9% of the cases are all going to settle for the policy limit anyways, well under that $1 million coverage. I'm sure the settlement that happened from a horse incident, I'm sure that's confidential, but I guarantee you it definitely wasn't $1 million. But that's my only point, is that $1 million coverage is more than sufficient, more than likely the reason that that's what's put in the CNRs as far as the coverage minimums. So $1 million, what we have in place is adequate. That's all I want to say.
Thank you.
Mary Lot 12, has the ranch ever been sued successfully? I think that was answered.
Well, it did not go to a trial and a jury verdict. It was settled. But
the insurance company settled.
Has the ranch paid out settlement claims? Yes. Any other comments?
Just one comment, not to be a stickler. This is 274 again. Settlement claim may have been paid out, but that doesn't necessarily mean, the ranch didn't pay it out. The policy paid it out. A lot of times insurance companies will pay out settlement claims or claims, even if they're a bad claim, just because the exposure versus the risk of continuing it on. They may throw out $5,000, and that's considered a paid out claim. So just everyone kind of keep that in mind as well, that just because a claim was paid out doesn't mean there was any potential liability on the ranch.
Correct. Any other input? Anybody online, any other input, one way, pro, con, or concern? All right, before we wrap up the discussion, I just want to say I've thought about this months and months and months and months, but especially over this last month, reading the feedback, and your feedback has been very helpful. But I've come to the conclusion, just one other background. initially the hesitation was, hey, we don't want our lots taken away, and we don't want this and that and the other thing, but we don't want to sign a waiver. So I went to a lot of time to try to figure out a compromise of, well, we'll assess the members and then we'll buy another insurance policy and blah, blah, blah. I've come to the conclusion that that's a complication that's absolutely unnecessary. We need to have rules. We need to have a penalty attached to noncompliance to the rules, whether the rules are changed to omit the waiver or anything else. But I also came to the conclusion we do not, under the newer revised statute, we do not have a mechanism for enforcement of any of our rules, and it has to be in the rules. So part of the vote, when we get to that point, my proposal, I'm just telling you, making it public in case you want to call me and threaten me or whatever, my proposal is that whatever the enforcement mechanism is on this rule, or whether we get rid of this rule altogether, that we adopt a penalty that is associated with the violation of any rule so that it's stated. And just so you know, my guidance or my thought on this was, if you violate a rule, then you pay the cost of damage. So if you break a window at the cabin, or you run through a fence, or you do something you're not supposed to, build a fire where you're not supposed to, you pay the actual damage of what that causes. So if you burn down the forest, it's going to be big. And if there's no damage, it's, in addition to that, you pay a fine equal to 10% of the annual assessment. So as assessments go up with inflation and other things, we don't have to revisit it. But we have a monetary penalty for noncompliance, and that would apply to all rules. If you're shooting a gun where outside of the areas permitted, or if you're building fires where they shouldn't be, that there's a penalty included in the rules. And so when it comes time to vote, my proposal is going to be not just an enforcement mechanism for the waiver, but an enforcement mechanism for all the rules that would apply equally across the board to make sure that we have that in place to be able to. I can tell you right now, thus far, we've had very, very few problems with enforcement of the rules or people breaking the rules. But that's, I think, eventually going to happen, and we have to have a mechanism now stated in the rules under the new statute so that everybody knows what they are and has the ability to see them, and they know, hey, if I build a fire where I'm not supposed to, I'm going to be assessed in addition to paying for any damages caused. So with that being said, I propose and make a motion that we table this matter until we have the full board here to debate and then have a vote.
Can I get one clarification before we do table that? So just to consider the fine policy, if we do actual costs, the new regulations require that we have a fine schedule. I mean, the percentage is kind of that fine schedule, but the actual damages, is that going to cause a problem?
That's not going to cause a problem, because there's no way we can identify and say a broken window. There's no question, and it's already in CCNRs and bylaws, by the way, already. If you cause damage, you're going to pay for it. So we're just restating that, but adding a separate penalty to that to deter people from rule breaking. Some of the rules are more important than others. I recognize that, but I think we need a mechanism to enforce all the rules, and that would include either a cabin waiver or a blanket waiver or no waiver at all. We need to have that mechanism in place, and so I'm going to propose that that's included.
Without it, you could not enforce any penalties currently.
That's correct. That is correct.
I'd like to also just interject, as someone who's handled like the invoicing and worked with like the cabin reservationists, there's been issues come up where a member has done damages, has built fires in unapproved areas that requires time and effort and money, and not having to go to the board each incident on what should this cost them, what should they pay, so that it's the same across the board, same for every member every year would be good.
I think it simplifies it. My thought is it simplifies things and allows us to get on. We've spent several months on this, and there are many, many other very important, if not more important, items we need to address as a board. So, Jeff?
So on the actual costs part of it, so like a fire pit, for example, how do you figure out what the actual costs are?
What
is it Is it just the fine part, or?
It'll be the fine buzz. If somebody has to go clean it up, and
we got to send somebody out.
The amount of time it took him to disassemble it,
yeah,
repair and re.
Right, and then what is that rate based out at? Because he's salary. So do we take his whole salary divided by however many hours he's expected to work per year, and that's where you get the rate, or is it?
I would see that as independent. His hourly.
Because that could be subjective, right? He could say, oh, well, I would charge $200 an hour for doing this, and so now somebody gets billed $400.
There may be some discussion on how to value the actual damage on a case-by-case basis. Bottom line is the rule needs to say actual cost. As long as the board is reasonable in determining the actual cost, we don't have to have discussion after discussion after discussion on each individual item. I can see where, yes, some of that stuff's subjective. Do we take his hourly cost? I'm not prepared to discuss or decide that today. I think we look at it. How I assess damages in court is what's it going to cost for me to hire somebody to clean up the mess? And they're going to charge me $25 an hour, and it took three hours, and here's your bill. If you don't like it, then come to the board, and we'll argue about it.
Well, the made fire pits that they're doing could be including the cleaning fee. Sorry.
And that would be that. Then that would be our actual damages. All right, I've made a motion that's pending to table this for a vote at the next meeting.
After the clarification, I would second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Are you still opening emails for more input?
I'm not resistant to receive more. As of now, we're done with holding an open meeting as we're required to. But I'm always open for input. If you want to send me an email, I appreciate. I know it doesn't sound like it, and I've been accused through this whole process of trying to take people's lots and, you know, tear off their heads and spit down their neck, whatever. Okay, I'm just trying to do what I think is best for the overall organization. We have been very fortunate so far that none of these things have come about. I'm trying to prepare for the future, and in the day-to-day stuff I deal with, I can see these things get way out of hand, and I'm just trying to protect the association from those kind of things. But at the end of the day, I think we do need to make a decision and move on, but I'm open for your suggestions. Sometimes it's going to be, hey, okay, sorry, I agree to disagree. That's where it's going to have to end. Sometimes then we can adjust things to it to make it more acceptable. But we've come to the point where we've got to make a decision. Any other questions, concerns? I think that's it.
Actually, I have one. So,
that can be brought up and put on the agenda and proposed by the membership or proposed by a board member anytime. It's not what we notified people that this meeting was about, but as you know, the rules can be changed in any meeting at any time as long as notice is given. So, and as long as there's open comment for the members. A lot of the criticism came from members saying, we didn't know anything about this. Why are we just finding out about this? And my response to that is, this is what we're giving you notice now. Here's, you know, for the last month, we've taken information. But those rules can be changed. And the blanket waiver that was adopted last year before I got on the board is the rule. It can be changed anytime. I'm not in favor of that, to be honest with you. I'll be up front. I like it the way it is. I feel that it covers as many of the bases as we possibly can. Is it overkill? Maybe. But in order for a waiver to be enforceable, it has to be very specific and very detailed. And some people ask, well, why is this just coming up now? Well, there are cases that have come out recently that say if the waiver doesn't say the word, I waive any claim for negligence, then it doesn't. And that's why the old forms were not as specific as it is now. You read it through, and it waives liability for zip lining and houseboating and everything else. That's not a problem right now, but we have to be as specific as we can. Anyway, I hopefully I answered your question.
I have a wildlife question.
So I know foxtail isn't good for dogs, for paws, for lungs, or whatever. Do deer or anything eat foxtail, or should we just eradicate it wherever we see it?
Eradicate it where you see it, in my opinion. But I'm not an arborist.
I mean, do the deer and elk eat it, or is it bad for them too?
I think any cattle eat it early, but once it heads out and deer survive on anything. They eat Cholla cactus, and if you ever have hunted in the desert and you go to clean your deer, its stomach could be completely full of cactus.
Okay, so which is, they can eat the seed heads?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's all I needed to know.
I'm not opposed to eradicating. If you have a secret way, that brings up an idea that I'd mentioned. Some of you know that occasionally I'd leave a rock or two in the middle of the road, and sometimes there's a $10 bill or a $20 bill or a $50 bill underneath it. I picked up a $20 bill yesterday that I had put under a rock probably a year ago. Somebody hit the rock with their car and it tumbled, and I found the bill in the sagebrush. I went looking for it when the rock was moved last year, but I found the bill yesterday in the sagebrush. Just happened to be walking at a particular spot and saw it.
Might be cheaper just to, like, leave a note with a contact Larry.
That $20 bill right there.
Redeemable for.
Anyway, the reason I was going to mention that with her weed foxtail thing, if you guys see these ugly-looking, goofy thistles growing, and they'll start just as one pod, and then there's 10, and then there's 200, stop and go chop them down. The earlier we can cut them, the better. If they've already seeded, headed out, and you cut them, the seeds will still propagate. But don't be afraid to get out of your vehicles every once in a while to move a rock or to cut a weed. I know usually we're all in a hurry to get wherever we think we're needing to get, and I know Brian's always running, so he doesn't have time to pick up rocks. But if you're out for a good walk, pitch a rock, pitch a stick. Another comment I wanted to make. I pick up probably, I would say, at least one ratchet strap a week, sometimes one a day, that break and end up on the county road. And then, obviously, sometimes there's a certain load secured with that strap, so there's parts and pieces. This past week, I know Tammy and Ed and others have seen and picked up pipes and poles and boards and pieces and parts and sometimes trailer ramps. If you can, pick them up and at least set them off to the side. Some gal came in here last week or a couple weeks ago when we were working on the playground, saying she had seen a trailer ramp fall off of a trailer and she couldn't catch the trailer to let them know. Any of those kind of things.
Somebody Facebooked that they were missing a trailer ramp.
It is, yeah. I don't
remember. Were you here when she came by? I can't remember. It was part of the crew when we were putting together the playground. She came pulling in here. It was too big and heavy for her to pick up and put in her car, but she was trying to catch the trailer and get their attention, and none of us knew who it was. It's definitely a ranch owner member, but
somebody did post that they'd lost one.
Well, usually the best thing is if you do move something out of the road, just leave it where it fell, because speaking from experience, when I lose something, I notice it as soon as I arrive wherever I'm going, and I immediately turn around and go back to get it. And several times when I've gotten back there, it's already been picked up and gone. And so
that's a nice pipe wrench that I had for like 2 years.
Yeah. I'm missing a high lift jack, by the way, in case anybody's picked one up. One of my great jailbird employees. How do you lose a... I just bought it off an auction. I got a pretty good deal on it, but they wear out, and so I keep getting new ones. And I had one, and it's like somewhere between the gravel pit and Slide Canyon, it vanished, and we went back and forth and back and forth. It's like, how do you miss a big red 5-foot-long chunk of steel? Anyway.
I yield my time.
What's that?
I yield my time. Isn't that what they say in all these CNN?
I reclaim my time. Yeah, Shut up. Okay. I reclaim my time. Stop. I reclaim my time. This is my time.
There's two. We'll open it up for members for 2 or 3 minutes on any other subject.
Yeah, I can get into the subject I'd like to talk about. I've seen a lot more trash on the roads. I'd like to organize a trash cleanup, maybe, if anyone wants to join. But I have a idea of hooking my dump trailer up and driving down Scootumpaw, and if you know, just picking up the trash on next to the road. And I noticed there was a lot of trash up by the ponds. And I was wondering if we could get like a 55-gallon barrel and a trash can up there. And if the ranch manager goes up, you know, daily to service the cabins, he can just grab it. I find it's easier than to change people's behavior. If you make it easier to do the right thing, It usually happens, but there were some bottles floating in the pond that I tried to fish out, but I didn't have a branch long enough. And I think trash on the side of the road makes people feel less, guilty by throwing more out. So,
right. There is a trash can up there over by
the middle.
Yeah,
no one's going to walk down.
I think we should create a for better term, the Forest Service does really good jobs with their little concrete outhouse buildings and a refuge bin of some kind with a heavy steel lid so the wind's not going to blow stuff all around the pond. But if we had a garbage spot at the first pond, at the second pond, at the third pond, it may be something that needs to be checked and emptied once a week just so it doesn't overfill and then start creating a bear, years ago we had a small bear that was going to the garbage cans at the upper cabins, so that's when we started bringing trash down here and not leaving trash cans at the cabins outside. But that's a good idea. That reminds me to ask you, I think Dave mentioned that somebody had come and camped on the lot next to you but was not the lot owner and left quite a mess of beer bottles and
beer cans and stuff on a vacant lot, yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of...
And they actually went up from McElroy's.
They cut their gate chain.
So were they camping at McElroy's or right across from you? Just north of you.
Across from us.
Yeah.
That's that dead end there, Larry, on whatever lot it is. You know, you go past McElroy's, mm-hmm. down to that.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to volunteer as a driver for my truck. Wow.
I thought I had the exact same idea day before yesterday, mainly down in lower Scootumpaw, Johnson Canyon. I just started, for whatever reason, I started noticing more trash. And some of it looked like it was obvious, you know, it's like somebody had thrown out a few drink bottles and stuff. I was like,
I think it's the truckers in the gravel pit because it seems to be heavy.
So are you going to run behind the trailer?
Yeah. He'll be
out in front scouting and hit his point.
I would be in the trailer, yeah, looking for trash and then just signaling and jumping off and throwing it in and then. At the end, probably go down Johnson Canyon and just take it to the Kanab landfill.
I think that's a great idea, and I think if we get the word out to have some participants to participate in doing that, and getting permanent garbage collection at the fish ponds as they get used more and more. Now, I understand you did some work up there at the fish ponds, cutting and trimming and that kind of stuff.
Looks great.
Thank you for doing that. I haven't been up there to see, but that's another central area of the ranch that a lot of people spend time that we want to pay. It kind of gets ignored sometimes from time to time, and we want to make it more park-like and less dump-like for sure. So
I did everything I could with my little tractor, but some of the willows got too dense, and it just keeps trying to kill my.
Yeah.
So
wad up.
That'll take something bigger or a different method. I don't know, but I would love to finish like around pond one and pond three back further. But
he said he found another pond.
There's another pond back there.
Yeah, man. That's the flood bypass. So there's actually five. So the one, two, and three upper, middle, and lower fish ponds. Above upper pond is a flood detention basin that I can plug, and it makes water go around the three ponds so they don't fill up with silt, and it goes over and fills the pond you found until it fills to the top, and then that flows back over to the second pond. We used to use it a whole lot more because we had a whole lot more water flow. Without any snow, there's no runoff and no silt coming down through the pond, so we've been trapping all the water we possibly could trap for the past 10 years or more. I have never closed the bypass to make water go around in the last 10 or 12 years. Also, we lose a lot of water because you would be shocked at the quantity of water that's consumed by trees and willows. It would baffle you. I mean, a big clump of willows sucks 100 gallons of water per day. So if you look at that clump and that clump and that clump and that clump, that's 100, that's 100, that's 100, that's 100. That's a lot of water.
It's just getting... drill between a couple of the ponds, like trying to... Because I'd love it to be clear all the way around, so you can walk all the way around the thing, but... It just was
if you pay attention, when you go past the Scootum Paw gravel pit, they have a massive, monstrous mountain of pink-colored. It's crusher fines, but it's very small. And yeah, but it's relatively inexpensive, and I would like to create the paths all the way around each pond and other places and cover it with clean gravel and that... That's the perfect stuff to make pathways because it doesn't stick to your feet. It's somewhat clean and it firms up. Not like a concrete city sidewalk, but a ranch sidewalk.
And I was just going to throw out there, any member that wants to put together a committee or get volunteers or get interest, let us know, because I can always send an email out to all the members with your information or a date or a poll. Jerry Glover mentioned he'd love to help you out, Brian. So anyone that ever wants to put anything together, let me know. We can put it on Facebook, but obviously an email to all the members gets it out there.
Did you have a day in mind that you were thinking of doing it, Brian, or you're just trying to get bodies in the spring?
Yeah, I'm retired, so every day is...
To me, that's a perfect Sunday afternoon, relaxed, rest from your labors.
You can't do Sunday to help.
The unfortunate part is the dump isn't open on... Western Kane County Sanitary Landfill isn't open on Sundays. I was corrected by Niall once on that, so... I've been to the dump, it's not that sanitary.
At least it's not on fire this year. Last year it was on fire about half the time.
Any other member comments? Concerns?
Okay. I move we adjourn.
I second.
July's meeting is the 12th. First weekend is 4th of July.
Yep.
12th.
When are you leaving for Alaska?
Probably, I was supposed to go July 22nd, but I might delay. When's Tyler's wedding?
26th.
Long answer, Larry. You should have said the 11th.
The 11th, yeah. Yeah, I might. His son's getting married, and so whenever you have a son or a daughter that you thought would never in their entire life, you know... so yeah, I will head to Alaska. My clients arrive
July 28th. And then I'll return home in September. When's our annual meeting this year? The 13th, so I'll be home on the 15th.
So, okay, so we've covered the July meeting.
Yep.
Right. Yes. I move we adjourn.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks for coming, everybody.
For coming.